Privyet and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Taylor, and I'm heavily medicated at the moment thanks to a fun bout of food poisoning I got last night. But such is life, and we're moving on to discuss Russian football, hence the intro greeting. So I'll have my buddy Vasily Uspinsky in studio with me to discuss the history of Russian football, the current state of the game in Putin's land, and why Ivan Drago of Rocky IV may not be the ideal candidate to represent Russian sports culture. But first we'll let 01 play a little more music. Joining me in studio is Vasily Uspinsky, a longtime fan of the Russian national team, as well as Moscow-based club Lokomotiv. More recently, Vas is a student at the VCU Brand Center, one of the top graduate schools for advertising in the country. Vasily, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Taylor. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And how are you doing this fine evening?
Doing well.
Now, Vas, you're wearing a Peru warm-up top at the moment. Would you care to explain why you're a Russian and Peruvian fan?
Just a victim of circumstance. Father was Russian and my mother was Peruvian. She was a diplomat back in the Soviet days, and birds and the bees, and you know how it goes.
Now, so would you consider yourself more of a Russian fan or more of a Peruvian fan?
Well, you know, the funny thing about having multiple passports is you get the luxury of choosing.
Since
Peru happens to be the worst team in the world, I'll go with Russia for this year.
Are they the worst team in South America at the moment?
That is correct.
Yeah, so I guess Russia's a safer bet, although not the greatest performances as of late. They failed to qualify for World Cup 2010.
Yes, that was, you know, Taylor, you know me personally, so you know what a blow emotionally that was to me. It's a shame because they, if you remember, in 2008, Russia made it to the semifinals in the Euro soccer tournament, and there were big hopes, and for Russia, that's actually something that's pretty special because it's been a long time. We hadn't done very well at the 2002 World Cup. We didn't make it past the first round, nowhere close, and we didn't qualify for Germany in 2006. So when Gus Hiddink came and kind of performed those miracles, it was something new for us, and it was something that we were looking forward to, and we had high aspirations. I thought Russia could take it to the finals.
Now you mentioned like the history of the Russian football team, and I guess this is where I'm a little confused because obviously I'm American, so I'm going to try not to be too biased here.
Sure.
But if you look at the Russian Federation, they basically began competing in FIFA tournaments in the '94 World Cup. They qualified for that one in the USA, but obviously their foundation goes back a little further. I think their first game was as the Soviet Union was in 1923.
Right.
So I guess my question for you is, do you think of the Russian team as a squad that's been around for like 16 years, or do you think of them as a squad that's been around for, you know, almost 80?
Right. I think I can speak for most Russians when we see the Russian Federation as a direct descendant of the Soviet Union, and that's for a variety of reasons and in a number of different ways. For one, Moscow was the seat of power for the Soviet Union, and it continues to be the capital for the Russian Federation. So since it was also centralized, we really see ourselves as kind of the next step. You know, there's just the Soviet Union in democracy. I don't know.
Gotcha. Now, we here in the United States, I think, tend to think of the Soviet Union pretty negatively. I mean, I guess, you know, you go back to the Cold War and all that. And it definitely seems to be the case with sports. The two that come to mind for me would be the 1980 Olympics when the USA knocked out the Soviet Union in the semifinals of hockey. Obviously, that's a big story. And then I think the other one, honestly, is Rocky IV, where Rocky goes toe-to-toe with Ivan Drago, who is Georgian in the movie. First of all, do you want to clarify, for those who've seen the movie, why it's hilarious that, 6'7", blonde hair, blue-eyed Ivan Drago is Georgian?
Georgians, and obviously this is a generality, from my experience, have been short, furry, and brown. There are Russians, you know, kind of the more ubiquitous, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a Georgian that looked like Ivan Drago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you look at the 1980, semifinal, we tend to have this idea of like the Russians as these, you know, big brutes who are kind of villainous. Same thing with Ivan Drago. In Rocky IV, there's all these references to him doing steroids and illegal training, and they're all ruthless and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I think that that's I'm going to guess a bit of an exaggeration for the way life was for Soviet athletes. So I'm wondering, do you have any insight into what it was like for an athlete to live in the Soviet Union?
Well, obviously I have no personal experience, but my father was actually an athlete for a rival club, CSKA Moscow, or CSKA as it's known in English.
Well, he actually played for them?
Yeah, he played on their basketball team.
Oh, okay, cool.
The way it works is each club is an umbrella, and it'll have a number of different sports underneath it. And so you have the same club that'll have, you know, a soccer team, basketball, hockey,
etc. Yeah, that's in Turkey. Turkey is the same thing.
So the way it works for athletes, even now, is you're a young kid, you have talent, and you're seen by a scout, and it's not unheard of, you know, being 5 or 6 and then being recruited into their schools. And then you go through the system, and the best of those kind of those magnet schools go on to the premier clubs, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't like Rocky, where they had state-of-the-art fitness equipment, and maybe they did have steroids. I don't know.
Well, no, I think you make a good point that in Rocky IV, you see him, he's, like, training in the mountains, and he's wearing a leather jacket and lifting stones and, like, fighting oxen and stuff. And then Ivan Drago has all this sophisticated technology. And I guess from what I've read, what I've seen of the Soviet Union, I think maybe it was more likely to be in the reverse, I guess.
Yeah, we'd be lucky to have all the stuff that Ivan Drago had then. We'd be lucky to have it now, to be honest. It's only the best and the most kind of prominent clubs and sports organizations that have access to that stuff. That stuff has made its way into Russia now because of you know, it being an open democracy.
Yeah.
But in the Soviet days, no way.
Well, I guess it's interesting for me because, you know, I'm only 25. I don't really have a lasting memory of the Soviet Union. But obviously they have a footballing history. They won the European Championships in 1960. That was a pretty big victory for them. However, with the fall of the Soviet Union, some might say that the quality of football, and I guess of, you know, Soviet sport, changed as the Russian Federation emerged. Well, the one that sticks out for me is the 96 Olympics in Georgia, or Atlanta, I guess, where I think the USA had the top medal count with 101 or thereabouts. And if you added up the Russian totals, you'd have Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Belarus, Uzbekistan, and Azerbaijan. They would have had 115 medals. So right. Obviously the Soviet Union would have come in tops there. So what do you think it was like, you know, as a football fan or as a sports fan, to go from, you know, you have all of these athletes coming in to all of a sudden it's like you have the Russian Federation and the, like, you know, Russia stands alone.
In terms of medal count, sure, it hurts that we don't have the Commonwealth of Independent Nations it is anymore. But, you know, the real problem lies within the infrastructure, the sports infrastructure, which really collapsed after the fall of the Soviet Union. And the quality that was once there wasn't as easily found just because, you know, the structure that brought these athletes out kind of crumbled.
Right. So now, like, Russia emerges, and you and I have had this conversation recently because it seems to me, if you look at, you know, modern football, at least in Europe, you have, you know, the Premiership, La Liga in Spain, maybe the Bundesliga in Germany, Serie A, probably not in that order, but those are the four big ones. And then maybe after that you have, like, Ligue 1 in France, however you pronounce that one, my French isn't great. And then, in my opinion, I'd say maybe the sixth best league is the Russian league, and I'd say it's definitely an emerging one.
It's an interesting contention because we have so little, really so little exposure to the Russian league here, and the only time I get to really see it is when I go back to Russia, or if I seek it on the internet.
Mm-hmm. But you mentioned earlier, like, the infrastructure kind of crumbling and then being rebuilt. What exactly is the infrastructure for most Russian teams? I mean, sadly, I think the most notorious Russian owner would be Roman Abramovich of Chelsea, the oil magnate who has more money than, you know, most humans can ever even think is real. But is that the case for most Russian clubs, or is it kind of spread out?
Well, you know, I think the reason you're saying it's the sixth, it could be the sixth, kind of the sixth man of the group is because, is really directly because of oil money. Abramovich isn't the only magnet out there. And he's actually put in money into Russian clubs. But there's another oil billionaire who owns Dynamo Moscow, which is another Moscow club. And he has pumped in millions and millions of dollars getting kind of top-tier players, most of which have kind of left, I think, for greener pastures, just because Russian football isn't the prettiest. And you can imagine that the weather doesn't really lend itself for good football, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because I feel like most people who either don't watch Russian football, that's me, or just people who think of, you know, the Russian climate, you know, you always try to tell me that it's beautiful there sometimes. I always make the joke that their diet consists of cold tears, because that's what I imagine they can readily find. You know, is it just kind of horrible winters with people trying to kick a ball around, or is that a bit of a stereotype?
Well, luckily, the Russian league actually ends before the winter really kicks in. Mm-hmm. So right now, the Russian league is on hiatus.
Yeah. So yeah, the English league, for example, runs from, you know, August to May generally. What months do you know does the Russian league run?
I think it starts up in late January or February. Don't quote me on that. Unfortunately, it's been a while since I watched a full season.
Yeah. So obviously you have the different schedules to accommodate that weather.
Right.
Yeah. You're saying.
Yeah. They play throughout the summer though. That's the that's usually when I start watching more, just because there's no EPL or La Liga or anything. So that's.
And you have firsthand experience of them playing throughout the summer. Is that correct?
Yes. I got the great opportunity of training with them for 2 summers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was pretty magical, just because they took me in, because I have foreigner status in Russia, so
yeah.
They found it to be a novel for me to train with them.
Now you played at VCU as well.
I did.
Yeah.
I didn't start.
Fair enough.
But I there was no one who could prepare a cup of water like I could.
You and me both. That's pretty much what my college playing experience was like. But I guess my question is, you know, you have, going back, maybe not to the Ivan Drago thing, but just you have, so I guess you have the way, you know, most people understand college sports to be. And I guess what's the main differences that you saw between, you know, Russian Premier League club training and, you know, what people might be used to back home or here in the States?
Well, do you mean in terms of like a collegiate level?
I guess I just mean, like, for example, this is kind of a silly story, but when I went to Turkey to study abroad, I ended up playing American football over there. And it was a bit, you know, eye-opening when they're like, oh, everyone plays with pads in the United States? Like, oh, we just got pads a couple years ago. And it's like, they've been playing 11-a-side football, American football, with no pads or anything like that. And it was just kind of like, okay. They don't believe in, like, water. They don't believe in drinking water. They think it makes you cramp. It's not good for you. That kind of stuff. I assume that they're a little more advanced in Russia, but I guess... I'm just wondering what the what a typical training period would be like for a professional Russian team.
Well, it's funny you say that, because at least at the time when I was training, which was back in 2002, 2003,
mm-hmm.
It was the same as your Turkish story.
Really?
No water. Water made you weak. Water made you soft.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be training in 100-degree weather. Which occurs, actually. And there are no bears roaming the streets, just in case anybody else was wondering.
No bears on unicycles?
That's right.
Okay, so we've been woefully misled on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, another thing I think that is interesting is we've talked about three Russian teams at this point. It's Lokomotiv, which is a Moscow-based team, CSKA Moscow, which is a Moscow-based team, and what was the third one?
Dynamo.
Dynamo Moscow, right. So that's three teams based in Moscow.
Spartak.
And Spartak makes four? So there are only four in Moscow, or are there more than that?
There's actually FC Moscow, I think, is the newest one.
Right.
So there's five, and then there's a whole bunch of, like, second and third league teams.
So you have those four main teams in Moscow, and then you have Zenit St. Petersburg. I guess that's the other big one. They won the...
Yeah.
UEFA Cup, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
So, is that the way it tends to be, like the major cities? You know, it's not like, I guess, in England where you have almost every single city or every single town has their own team?
Well, not anymore. It's changing. The environment is definitely changing. Just this season in Champions League, you saw Rubin Kazan beating Barcelona.
Yeah.
At Barcelona, and then, you know, and then securing a draw at home. And, you know, these are guys who live out by the Urals, the Ural Mountains. So it's not...
Is that the equivalent of, like, West Virginia?
Well, it's... I don't know, Russian culture is very... very feudal in nature. It's kind of like a contemporary feudalistic society, and with that comes kind of that mindset of you have the capital and then everything else is the province. And we've talked about this before off the air, but yeah, sure, a little bit comes of that. And they have for those who grew up in that area, they have a chip on their shoulder about that. And so they do have something to prove. Mm-hmm. And this season, they certainly have proved it. And but the paradigm is shifting. It's changing. It's mm-hmm. changing in Russian football. That's true.
Once again, we're speaking with Vasily Uspensky, who I'm going to say is now officially the show's Russian football expert. You can be the Soviet expert, too, if you'd like. So I guess we talked a little bit about maybe where the league is going. But I guess the big question for me is the players that you're seeing. You know, you have, I guess the big ones would be Andrei Oshavin. He's now with Arsenal. To some extent, Roman Pavlichenko, who's with Tottenham. I know that you're not a big fan of him. And then the third one that comes to mind would be Yuri Zhirkov, who's playing with Chelsea.
Sure.
There's, you know, plenty of other ones. But it seems to me that the Russian league is sort of, it's better than the MLS, Major League Soccer, I'd say. But is it sort of becoming a situation where once a player gets good enough, he goes to a Spanish team or an English team or an Italian team? Or do you think that there's a big push to, you know, internally develop players in the Russian system?
Well, that's interesting you say that, Taylor, because that's actually one of the big, big conflicts in Russian football right now. You know, the part of the problem when the Soviet Union collapsed was that all the best players were just leaving the country.
Mm-hmm.
You have the best Russian hockey players in the NHL. Mm-hmm. What few Russian basketball players and ex-Soviet players mm-hmm. Also just go to the NBA. That's changed somewhat, but soccer has kind of lagged behind and is actually experiencing that now. Mm-hmm. Ever since Gus Hiddink came.
Yeah, I suppose we should clarify at this point, since we've mentioned Gus Hiddink before. He's a Dutch coach. He won, you know, multiple league titles with PSV Eindhoven in the Dutch league. He took them to one European Cup, which I believe they won. And then, you know, he's coached for Real Madrid. He's coached for Chelsea. But I think the big thing that stands out is he coached for South Korea in 2002. He took them all the way, you know, well into the tournament. He coached Australia in 2006, and he brought them into the knockout round where they definitely weren't expected to go. And then, you know, more recently he's coached Russia and done a fairly good job. You know, he did really well in Euro 2008, maybe not in World Cup qualifying. But so I guess you're saying that with Gus Hiddink comes success?
With the arrival of Gus Hiddink, whether it be, you know, with failure or success, he brought the world's eye to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, you know, the Roman Pavluchenkos or the Andrei Oshavins had a window to the world, and all our best players suddenly had the opportunity to move on to bigger leagues, more prestigious leagues, not necessarily for more money, but certainly for kind of the bragging rights that every athlete, I think, wants to own. So what happens now is that all of our best players have the opportunity to leave, and people don't necessarily know if that's good, because if you remember back in 1996, the Czech Republic was a European powerhouse almost. They reached the finals of the European Cup, and they had a ton of kind of local homegrown talent that suddenly was up for grabs in the biggest leagues, in the Italian league, Spanish, English, certainly. I mean, Pavel Nedved, kind of a veteran. Now a retired veteran of Juventus.
One of the greatest poofy mullets of all time. You should really Google him, Pavel Nedved plus hair. It's spectacular.
He looks like Patrick Swayze.
He really does. He does. You're right.
He was
our second 80s pop culture reference. Yeah. I think we're really doing a good job so far. Sorry, anyway, Pavel Nedved.
He was actually an example of success, but there were a good number of other players that did move abroad. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, never found their stride and found themselves increasingly on the bench, out of form, and then out of favor back at home.
Mm-hmm.
and that was kind of the end of the Czech Republic as a soccer powerhouse. You haven't really seen them around lately just because all their veterans, all the people who came out of that kind of golden era have since faded. Mm-hmm. So Russia's in the same spot now. I mean, you see Roman Pavluchenko, who plays for Tottenham. He had a great, well, a supposedly great Euro 2008 tournament. Yeah. And ever since he moved to London, he hasn't done really anything. Mm-hmm. Andrei Arshavin is a great example of success. Mm-hmm. He's moved to Arsenal in England, and he's done fantastic. And now I think he's a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. And just recently, Everton took Dinyar. What is it, Bilalientinov? He was the captain of Lokomotiv. Mm-hmm. My favorite Russian club.
Right.
So he's done well, but the risk here is having our kind of local homegrown talent go abroad, mm-hmm. not do well, and then bring that failure back home.
Well, do you think that's a popularly held belief? Because, you know, for a lot of Americans, like Landon Donovan, for example, just went to Everton as well, and I think some people were conflicted about that, thinking that he should be in the MLS, that's what he should be focusing on. But I think far more were like, you know, look, our best player can go and play in England. You know, same thing with Clint Dempsey, for example. I think a lot of people are happy that he's there, maybe not because he's getting better, but just because it shows that, you know, we're reaching a certain level. You know, like I'd say, you think of the Soviet Union, you go back to the cultural stereotypes, you think of these kind of like big, huge guys, and you wouldn't really think of them as being these creative, you know, talented, right, flair players.
Right.
You know, you mentioned Arshavin, you mentioned Zhirkov. I've seen Zhirkov play in person. Zhirkov, he reminds me more of a Brazilian, I'd say, than, you know, a big, big British man.
Well, it's funny because the Russian national football team, excuse me, the soccer team is, they're all pretty diminutive.
You can say football or soccer. Either one works.
Total football soccer.
There you go.
They're all pretty small, except for a couple of defenders who are big guys. I mean, even the keeper is under 6 foot.
Really?
Or just around six.
Is that allowed?
He's pretty good.
Is his first name Igor?
Igor Akinfeev.
God, you guys can't 23. Stereotypes, can you?
23, yeah. He's good. He's very good. I hear Ferguson, Sir Alex Ferguson of Manchester United. Yeah,
call him by his proper name, please.
Sir Alex?
Oh, you had it right, no. He listens to the program, and if you...
Oh.
Yeah, he listens to the program, and if you get it wrong, he's going to write. And I don't really want to incur the wrath of Sir Alex Ferguson.
All right. I guess you're referring to Fergie?
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Okay, yeah. I hear he's looking at mm-hmm. at the possible acquisition of Igor Akinfeev. Here's the gist of it. It's all about sustainability. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at soccer kind of from a more global standpoint, if you're the Russian Football Federation, you want your players to get playing time. You mm-hmm. want them to get better. Ideally, you want them to get better under a more advanced system of football, a better league, whatever, a good coach. But it doesn't matter. You can be on the best team in the world, but if you never see the field, then you're not going to get better as a player. You're not going to get the touches. You're not going to get the recognition. Certainly, it's not going to do anything for your, I guess, your morale or something of that sort. But the big thing is playtime. And if you don't feel comfortable, if you can't adapt to a certain system of play, then you're doomed. I mean, where's Freddie Adu today?
Yeah, exactly.
He was the great, great hope for American football. And mm-hmm.
I think he just signed for a Greek club. But yeah. Definitely. There was all this hype that he was going to be the guy to lead us to victory in 2010, and now I'm not even sure if he's going to make the squad.
Right, and it's good to have kind of your trophy player say, hey, look at this great player that we have. But in the end, you know, it's about scoring goals, it's about getting better as a player and as a person, because we're getting to the age where we're almost veterans of soccer,
yeah.
You know, and we're talking about kids who are 7 or 8 years younger than we are.
I actually had a conversation earlier with a former teacher of both Vasily and myself who pointed out that in the last show I managed to call Ryan Giggs over the hill or too old. He's 36, and I think it's what you're talking about, that,
yeah,
you know, in soccer, 36 is ancient. You're a dinosaur, but,
right,
you know, in the rest of the world, 36 is you're still young.
Right.
It's that weird, difference between professional, yeah, athlete and not.
I mean, you're totally right. You know, people in normal life who are 29 or 30 are mm-hmm. seen as rising stars, but yeah. in football, you're almost, you know, you're almost kind of a senior citizen, I would think.
So if our listeners out there are unfamiliar with the Russian league, is there any one player that you think is going to be, you know, a big name here in the future or sure. any club, I guess?
Well, we've mentioned him already, but Igor Akinfeev. He is young. He's only 23. Mm-hmm. And for a goalkeeper, that's especially young. Mm-hmm. And even though Russia didn't qualify for the World Cup, there's nobody who would argue that it was because of goalkeeping.
Fair enough.
He is really, really solid, and he's a great player. And, you know, he's only going to get better. And that hurts me to say because he plays for a rival football club, but it's the truth.
So to sum up, Igor Akinfeev is the player to watch. Water makes you weak, and Ivan Drago is perhaps not the most accurate representation of a Russian athlete. That'd be fair.
I must crush you.
Well done. All right. Well, Vass, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. And like I said, any further Russian questions, I'll direct your way.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Taylor.
Yeah, man. Good luck with school.
Thank you. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Enjoy not sleeping.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, and with that, we come to the end of yet another episode of the Total Football Soccer Show, our first Russian-themed show, so not bad, if I do say so myself. I'm off to sleep and take a bunch of medicine, and hopefully you all have a better, healthier week than I, and we'll see you next time.